Buyer agency agreements. Historically, buyers were not represented by license holders. The buyer in the transaction was an unrepresented customer, and all brokers in the transaction represented the seller. Over the last 30 years, buyers have become increasingly aware of the benefits of buyer agency representation. In most states, including Texas, buyer agency agreements may be created orally or in writing. However, by far, the best method is to do so in writing. A written buyer agency agreement is explicit regarding the duties and responsibilities of both the buyer and the broker. Note also that intermediary consent must be obtained in writing, which is a problem when representing a buyer under an oral buyer representation agreement. Sometimes license holders might be in the habit of representing buyers under an oral agreement, then later move to a written buyer representation agreement in order to obtain intermediary consent. An agent should take care when moving from an oral agreement to a written one because the terms of the written agreement may conflict with the oral agreement with the buyer. When written provisions conflict with oral provisions, the written ones virtually always prevail. Confusion and misunderstanding over oral and written agreements will undoubtedly result in an unhappy buyer client. Like the listing agreement, the buyer representation agreement is an employment contract. In order to collect compensation, brokers must prove that they were employed to sell the property. Even though a broker may have been influential in executing the sale, the broker is not entitled to compensation unless they were employed. All listing and buyer representation agreements must be in writing to be enforceable. Oral agreements are not enforceable against the client, but are enforceable against the agent. If a broker sells a property on an oral listing agreement, the broker is considered by the courts to have freely volunteered services. Like the listing agreement with a seller, the buyer-tenant representation agreement should be in writing. Elements of a buyer representation file should include the following: general characteristics of the property search, market area, buyer's and broker's obligations, term of the agreement, broker's duties to clients and customers, compensation agreement, consent for the broker to represent other buyers, fair housing language, signatures of the parties, intermediary consent, benefits of buyer agency relationships. In the past, buyer representation was rare. Sellers were clients and buyers were customers. Over time, buyers have discovered the benefits of representation, including access to market data. While some of the data in MLS is accessible to the public, the majority of it is not. Investment analysis. If the property is going to be rented or held for appreciation or development. Assistance in culling unsuitable properties. Buyers will waste time looking at neighborhoods and properties that do not fit their criteria. Assistance in obtaining financing. Buyer's agents will have several trusted lenders for referral, which is preferable to the random selection of a lender. Assistance with negotiations. The buyer's agent stands between the seller and buyer, which allows the buyer to contemplate offers and counteroffers. Assistance in preparing offers and negotiating strategies. Assistance with surveys, inspections, repairs, and many of the details that must be taken care of in order to close a sale. Buyers who do not sign a representation agreement with an agent are considered customers. Though customers are not receiving the benefits of a buyer agency agreement with a broker, license holders still owe specific duties to them, including honest dealing. An agent may not deceive, defraud, or otherwise dishonestly deal with a customer. Reasonable care and skill in performance. An agent will be held to the standards of knowledge, expertise, and ethics that are spelled out in the Texas Real Estate License Act. Disclosure of all material facts. The license holder must disclose all facts that he or she knows of, or should reasonably be expected to know, that materially affect the value of or desirability of the property. Material facts include disclosure of agency, property condition, and environmental hazards. Regardless of representation, all buyers should be provided with an oral or written disclosure of representation at first contact. That disclosure is usually oral when the buyer first calls or visits the office. Whatever the method of contact, personal visit, phone, fax, or email, the notice of representation should be given. Before discussing the needs and wants of the buyer, the agent should provide the buyer with any required agency disclosures. If the buyer is interested in a property that is owned by the listing broker, or agent, parent, child, or spouse of the broker or agent, that relationship must also be disclosed. Likewise, if the buyer is an agent, parent, or child of the agent, that relationship must be disclosed as well. Broker employment, buyer employment. When representing a buyer, the seller must clearly understand the fee arrangements between the seller, the buyer, and the agents. Maintaining clarity in compensation is one of the many good reasons to insist upon a written buyer representation agreement. In the Texas residential real estate business, compensation is commonly paid by sellers to the listing broker. The listing broker agrees in the listing agreement to split the fee with a cooperating broker. The fee split is negotiable between the seller and the listing broker. The fee should be generous enough to encourage buyer agents to show the property. The fee split arrangement for buyer's agents is often different from what is offered to subagents. If the listing broker does not allow subagency, the subagency compensation split is 0%. The fee paid to a buyer's agent varies and is often one half of the total fee paid to the listing broker. Fee splitting arrangements are often established by virtue of membership in the local multiple listing service, MLS. By posting the listing in MLS, a listing broker is offering to split the fee according to the terms of the listing agreement and the broker's membership agreement. Brokers working with non-MLS brokers should contact the listing broker and enter into a fee-sharing agreement before showing the property to the potential buyer. While the broker information section of TREC promulgated contracts contains information regarding a fee split, it is not a fee-splitting agreement with the listing broker because brokers are not parties to the contract. The exception to this rule is the TREC promulgated farm and ranch contract, which does contain a fee-splitting agreement. In any event, all parties and agents need to be aware of representation and which party is responsible for the payment of a fee. Suit for compensation. Only a broker may earn compensation, and only a broker may sue to collect compensation. The broker may sue a seller who has defaulted on a listing agreement or a buyer who has defaulted on a buyer's representation agreement. If a broker seeks to enforce payment of compensation, the following requirements must be satisfied. The broker must have an employment agreement with a promise to pay compensation, signed by the party to be charged, usually the seller. The broker must hold a valid real estate license. The broker must be the procuring cause of the sale. The broker must provide a ready, willing, and qualified buyer who agrees to the sale terms required by the seller. The buyer may not be under duress. The license holder must have informed the purchaser, in writing, to have the abstract examined by an attorney, or the buyer should be furnished with a title policy. Procuring cause of sale. Most litigation over the payment of real estate compensation arises from disputes over who was the procuring cause of sale. The procuring cause of sale is the individual who, through a series of uninterrupted activities or actions, brought about the completion of a contract. The rule is that the broker must perform within the time specified in the contract. It should be added that compensation does not rest on the amount of work completed by a competing broker. Instead, it is a question of who has performed the agency to find a ready, willing, and able buyer. The determination of procuring cause is quite tricky and is dependent on the court's interpretation of the circumstances of the transaction and the actions of the parties involved. Termination of listing agreements and buyer representation agreements. Since listing agreements and buyer representation agreements are employment contracts by which agents are expected to perform certain duties for the principal, they will automatically terminate on the termination date agreed upon in the contract. They will also terminate when the purpose of the contract has been fulfilled, i.e., the agent sells the house per the listing agreement. Listing agreements and buyer representation agreements can also be terminated by abandonment by the broker, revocation by the principal, mutual consent, mutual rescission. Acts of law, bankruptcy of the seller or broker, foreclosure. Death of the principal or broker. Death of the sales agent does not terminate the agreement. Destruction of the property or condemnation under eminent domain. Change in zoning/property use. Texas Realtors. Residential Buyer Tenant Representation Agreement. Paragraph 1. Addresses the parties to the agreement. Paragraph 2. The appointment statement affords the agent the same benefits as relayed in the listing agreement, loyalty to the broker. But one should note that the BRA is unique in the sense that a buyer can enter into the same type of agreement with multiple brokers, so long as the market areas do not overlap. Paragraphs 3A and 3B clarify two definitions. Paragraph 3C, defining the market area, requires the agent and buyer to be clear regarding the market area or areas in which this agreement applies, especially if another broker in another market area is also representing the client. Paragraph 4. There must be a definite termination date, and the term could be as short as 1 day, or for only one or specifically selected properties. At least that party is being represented as a client for that 1 day. Some buyers are more likely to sign a BRA for a shorter period and consider a longer commitment when they feel more comfortable with the agent. If one were looking at the listing agreement and BRA side by side, one would determine that in essence, paragraphs 11, 12, and 13 in the listing agreement are more or less congruent with paragraphs 5, 6, and 7 in the BRA. These paragraphs are just not as long in the BRA, though just as important and deserving of explanation. By explaining these three paragraphs effectively, the agent fulfills both compliance requirements and practical buyer-broker mutual benefits. Paragraph 7. Broker compensation. Recently updated in light of the NAR settlement, this paragraph details broker compensaton, if any. All parties to a real estate transaction are entitled to know not only who is representing whom, but how the parties are being paid, the source of any compensation. Paragraph 7. Broker's fee. After thoroughly negotiating compensation with the buyer, enter the agreed-upon broker's fee. Paragraph 7. B. Source of compensation. The broker anticipates payment of compensation by the seller. If the seller does not pay compensation, or if the compensation is less than what is entered in 11A, the buyer is obligated to pay the difference. This paragraph could be a source of concern for buyers unaccustomed to paying commissions. On the other hand, if the broker is truly representing the interests of the buyer should anticipate the possibility of paying for this service. For example, if the agent located a suitable property for a buyer and the seller were unwilling to pay compensation, it would be appropriate for the buyer to pay for the services provided by the agent. Paragraph 7. D. Acquisition of broker's listing. If the buyer purchases one of the broker's listings, the seller will pay the entire fee, and the buyer will have no liability for the payment of compensation. Paragraph 7. F. Protection period. The protection period is a period of time during which the agreement expires that the buyer may owe the broker a fee if a property is purchased. Paragraph 8. Representations. Paragraph 9. A. Intermediary. The BRA complies with the requirement to gain written consent to enter into an intermediary status. This is the language required under the License Act when the client gives intermediary consent. Paragraph 9. B. No intermediary status. This is very specific and looks further at certain limitations that would exist without intermediary authorization. Paragraph 10. Competing clients. The broker is working with multiple clients. In this paragraph, the buyer is giving the broker permission to show properties in which the buyer has an interest to other potential buyers. In other words, properties are not placed on hold for the client. Paragraph 11. Confidential information. As with the seller in the listing agreement, confidential information remains confidential forever, subject to the limitations in this paragraph. Paragraph 12. Mediation. Any disputes arising under the contract that the parties cannot resolve through informal means will be submitted to mediation before resorting to arbitration or litigation. Paragraph 14. Attorney's fees. The prevailing party in any legal proceeding may collect reasonable attorney fees and court costs. Paragraph 16. Addenda. Notice that the agency statement, information about brokerage's services, is mandatory and pre-checked in the agreement. Paragraph 18d fulfills the requirement to advise the client that the client should have an abstract covering the property examined by an attorney of the client's selection, or the client should be furnished with or obtain a title insurance policy. Compensation rates. Commission rates and any other means by which sellers and buyers compensate brokers are always negotiable between the parties. Any attempt by a group of brokers to set compensation rates in their area or between a group of brokerage firms would be considered illegal price fixing. As mentioned in Chapter 2, the federal laws that have the most significant impact in this area are the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Act. The Sherman Antitrust Act is very specific concerning this violation. These acts were at the heart of a string of antitrust lawsuits filed between 2019 and 2023. On March 15, 2024, the National Association of Realtors, NAR, agreed to settle with the plaintiffs of Burnett v. NAR, one of the antitrust lawsuits. NAR released policy changes in light of the settlement, which were reflected in regional promulgated forms nationwide. Texas Realtors, TXR, and Trek updated and added to their provided forms to reflect these policy changes. These new forms adapted previous versions to comply with the policies outlined in the settlement to increase transparency for homebuyers and sellers. A notable change stemming from the settlement is a shift in language. Where broker's payment was once referred to as a commission, the term compensation was adopted instead. While some documents may still use the term commission, compensation provides a better understanding of the payment structure. Property management agreements. Another type of contract used in the real estate business is the property management agreement. The management agreement will specify the responsibilities and tasks the property manager is expected to complete for a property owner. The management agreement is the property manager's employment contract. The management agreement creates a fiduciary relationship, meaning that property managers owe the same fiduciary duties to their clients that sales agents owe to their buyer and seller clients. Obedience, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, accounting, and reasonable care. Old car. These duties are the minimum requirements of any relationship. A written property management agreement between the property owner and the brokerage should include the duties and responsibilities of the property manager and the property owner. The management term, when the agreement begins and ends. A detailed description of the property written when the property manager firm takes over management duties. Policies and procedures for repair of the property. The management agreement will dictate a large part of the relationship by setting the owner's expectations regarding roles and channels of communication. It is also a good indicator of how involved or uninvolved the owner will be. The management agreement not only delineates the duties of the property manager to the owner, but also includes the fee schedule or pricing schedule, according to which the owner will pay the property manager. Just as there are different ways to calculate a broker's compensation on a sale, percentage of sales price, flat fee, there are fee schedules that determine how a property manager is paid. The traditional approach to management fees is to take a percentage of the rent for the services offered. This percentage is in the vicinity of 8 to 10%, though there is no established industry standard. Fees will vary up or down based on the market in which the property is located. Not all percentage-based fee agreements are the same. There is a marked difference between management agreements that state fees as a percentage of the gross monthly rents, potential, scheduled, rents, and the rent collected. Owners will prefer the language in the agreement to read as a percentage of rent collected. Paying a flat fee may seem more palatable for owners than being charged a high percentage of their monthly rental income. The flat fee pricing model will appeal to some owners, because it is a known quantity every month. Many companies offer the same rate, no matter how many properties they manage for the owner. Some companies may even lower the monthly rate if the owner brings more properties online. Many property managers shy away from the flat fee model because it does not take into account the actual size of the property and associated amenities. If the monthly rate is the same, no matter the size of the property and the scope of work required to manage it effectively, the PM could be severely undercharging the client. Many property managers will charge their clients other fees related to the management of the property, including leasing fees, fees in the event of a sale, service fees, administrative fees, fees for legal proceedings, usually evictions, interest collected on trust accounts, fees from pet rent and pet deposits, among others. All additional fees charged on top of the basic monthly maintenance fee must be negotiated upfront and included in the management agreement, signed by both parties. A professional property manager would never decide to charge an additional $15 fee on top of an invoice without already having the agreement in place. If these fees are explicitly written into the contract and the client signs it, then they agree to compensate the property manager as addressed in the contract. Management agreements will vary based on the type of property managed. Retail properties are very different from apartment complexes. For this reason, many property management companies will have their management agreements created by an attorney. TREC does not promulgate any property management agreements. However, Texas Realtors R does have the Texas Realtors R Residential Leasing and Property Management Agreement, TXR 2201, and the Texas Realtors R Commercial Property Management Agreement, TXR 2202, available for their members.